to time for an awakening. On Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And listen to the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn app to any of your devices. On your desktop, you can just log on to it. But any of your handheld devices, you can download the TuneIn app. It's a free app. TuneIn app. In that search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon where you can listen to the program, stream it live, even into your car. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And also Time for Awakening Media has been launched. In your search engine, it should be one of your favorites. Just type in timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, blogs, articles, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have two special guests join us, activists and spokesperson for our friend and political prisoner, Reverend Edward Pinckney. Mr. Robert McKay will be with us to give us an update on Reverend Pinckney and his scheduled impending release from behind enemy lines coming sometime in June. We'll talk to Mr. McKay about Reverend Pinckney, how he's doing, and just to inform us on what's going on. Also, in the second portion of our program, we'll be hearing from African human rights defender and activist, Brother Chris Umapampa will be with us. Brother Chris will inform our listening audience about the human atrocities, the horrible human atrocities happening to black people in Libya that's trying to flee the country. We'll get into it with our special guests, and starting with Mr. Robert McKay after we take a brief break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist, tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, how you doing, Brother Ellen?
How are you, sir?
I'm good, good. I'm looking forward to the discussion tonight. Two very important, one update and the other a very important topic. It touches me in a couple of ways. But I have to say, today in Philadelphia, we have our Odunde Festival, which is a New Year celebration coming out of the Yoruba tradition. And it's turned into a large gathering of people over the 40-something years that has been going on in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia in particular. And it's good to see another generation. But I also have to say I would like to have seen more political organizing out of the cultural matrix of the festival. Because in South Philadelphia, as you know, Elliot, there's a lot of gentrification going on. And the people who are coming in are not necessarily people who were like people who were living here already. So it's a transition, a cultural transition, an economic transition. But in spite of all that, we're celebrating another year and dealing with the issues that we should be dealing with.
Yeah, well, Brother Richard, listen, that area where the Odunde Festival has been going on, I think it's 45 years now.
Yeah.
That was my old neighborhood. Early on, the folks used to use it as a quasi-family reunion. I haven't attended the Odunde maybe for the past 5 years, but the neighborhood is totally changed. It's a white neighborhood now, and I mean, it's sad. It's good to see the festival is still going on, but it's sad to look at my old area and see it's totally changed. Black politicians have allowed these developers to change the zoning of the area so the buildings don't even look the same. The two-story homes, Europeans have came in and made them three-story. The three-story homes, they've came in and made them four stories with rooftop decks and all this other stuff. So even the makeup of the neighborhood, if you weren't from that area and go back there, you wouldn't think it's the same area because the buildings have totally changed. It's really crazy.
And these are the kind of things that issues that we try to deal with in Time for Awakening when you talk about new paradigm and, or anywhere. And I take it that's what issues similar to that, Reverend Pinkley, which we'll be getting that update about, is, kind of addressing and the difficulty of when you're whether you're living in the community or whether you're observing and living in the community or whether you're an activist in the community, the challenge we have in dealing with the power structure that exists internally and externally. So it's something that we can't give up on, but we still have to recognize. And believe me, when I walked through the Odunde Festival today, what you said, I mean, the whole skyline changed, the buildings changed. It's just amazing what can happen. And you raised the question of how could it have happened for people to come in, and it couldn't happen for people who were already living there.
You know, the struggle continues, Brother Richard, and I'm happy to hear from activists and a spokesperson for Reverend Pinkney. Mr. Robert McKay will be joining us momentarily. We first met Reverend Pinkney when we were on terrestrial radio, and his activism in Benton Harbor, which led him to be put behind bars the first and the second time. Gentrification in Benton Harbor, which is 98% black, all over Michigan, emergency managers taking over the governments. Gentrification at a rapid pace. But a fighter like Reverend Pinkney was on the front lines fighting to save the city that he was from, Benton Harbor. Whirlpool was involved heavily in the gentrification. Jack Nicklaus, or one of those golfers, the championship golf course that they were putting there, pushing black folks out, and he was on the forefront of the fight. The NAACP and his area of Michigan and probably in that state had been taking lots of money from Whirlpool, so they refused to get behind him. Reverend Pinkney quit the NAACP after that, but he continued to fight, which led him to be behind bars the first and the second time as a political prisoner in my eyes. Tonight we'll be hearing from Mr. Robert McKay to give us an update on Reverend Pinkney and his impending release this month. Mr. McKay, how are you, sir?
Good, Mr. McKay. Good, yourself. How are you?
I'm glad to have you with us, myself and Brother Richard.
Thank you. I'm Brother Richard in Philadelphia. I've been listening to your conversation. And in fact, I was in Philadelphia back in February and did see some of the similar gentrification processes that are going on in Philadelphia. It's happening in Chicago. In fact, it's across the country, and it may be around the globe, for that matter. Yes. But I know that in the New York Times front page back in March of 2010, there was a question written by Charles Blow. The question was, is New York City being ethnically cleansed of black people? And you go and you try to find that story in the archives of the New York Times now. It's not there. They've changed the story, and they changed some of the contents. It's called Escape from New York City. It's a joke on what they're doing to our people.
Oh, they changed his byline and everything, huh?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, you go in there now, and you cannot find it. And, in fact, I called him. I emailed him. I text him and send him. I left him a voicemail asking that question, but he has not responded. And that's been a couple of years now since I tried to reach out to him. So I imagine that. And I saw him for the first time on, I think it was CNN. I was at a venue someplace, and CNN was on. He was one of the commentaries on CNN during the last campaign the presidential campaign, and he was commenting. So, Mr. Blow, I'm sure has should have an answer to the question of how a critical story like that, ethnic cleansing, has been changed to a movie script, Escape from New York City.
Mr. McKay, we want to get a little update on our friend and political prisoner, Reverend Pinckney. You know, when we first, and I said it before you came on, when we first met Reverend Pinckney, he was fighting on the forefront of Benton Harbor. That second time that landed him in behind the bars was his rallying people to vote in reference to that emergency manager. Talk about his impending release, how he's doing. Give our listening audience an update.
Well, should I give the audience aware of why he is in prison?
You can go into that, too. I mean, we've talked about that on several occasions, but for listeners that haven't heard.
Okay, well, I'll just give you an update. Right now, Reverend Pinckney was sentenced from 30 to 120 months. That's 2.5 to 10 years. His 2.5 year period is coming up, is ending on June 13th. That's this coming Tuesday. He's anticipated being released. I've spoken with him many times while he's in there. And he met with the parole board back in January via Skype. It took them almost 2 months to get back to him on his pending their decision. So they finally got back to him and told him that he would be paroled on June 13th. And he informed me last week that he would be on parole for 1 year after his release. So I guess that's pending. I'm sure they'll be monitoring his activities, his actions, and his whereabouts while he's on during his parole period. And,
go ahead.
Of course, I know in the last few days, the last 3 days, his wife has not heard from him because he routinely calls her in the evening after he's made his other phone calls, you know, various people throughout who has placed funds on their phone to allow him to call out to them. And I have not heard from him. I spoke with him last on Friday.
So. Mr. McKay, tell our listening audience the incident. Give them a little background on what landed him in prison this last time, dealing with the... go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last time, Reverend Pinckney was... you know, they reached out. The city of Benton Harbor had a black mayor, elected mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor was not representing the community, you know, because the gentrification continued while this guy was in office. And he, in fact... disregarded the black community and on behalf of Whirlpool. Whirlpool is housed or headquartered in Benton Harbor.
Okay.
And Benton Harbor, St. Joseph, they're referred to as the Twin Cities because the river separates Benton Harbor from St. Joseph, Michigan. However, the community, specifically the black community, but they like to refer to it as a poor community, has been gentrified. The people's homes are taken away pennies on the dollar. And I believe Benton Harbor still has about a 92% black population there, but it's dwindling. Because of the former mayor, he's a former mayor now, James Hightower, his actions or non-actions in representing the black people in Benton Harbor, Reverend Pinckney spearheaded a petition drive to have the mayor recalled. He was going to place a referendum on the ballot to have the mayor recalled. He was successful in doing that. He had circulators throughout the Benton Harbor with those petitions. They gathered enough signatures to place it on the ballot. He submitted those petitions to the clerk, who we discovered later on was never sworn in. So she was never the official clerk of Benton Harbor, but she received and accepted those petitions. And while in their possession, they decided to come to concoct a scheme to charge Reverend Pinckney with election fraud. So they came back 2 weeks after those petitions being in their possession and decided to charge Reverend Pinckney with forging the dates on the bottom of the page of five sheets. And that constituted election fraud. So they decided to arrest Reverend Pinckney. They cooked up a warrant to have him arrested. But on the day that they they sent a SWAT team to his home to gather him. But when they left, I think they arrived about 20 minutes after he left his home to take his wife to celebrate their wedding anniversary. And while they when he returned, the neighbors informed him that the SWAT team was at his home to arrest him. He turned himself in to the jail with his lawyer. And he was formally charged with the election fraud, the five counts or what have you. And the trial subsequently took place late in the fall of 2014. He was tried and convicted. On the day of the sentencing, because that was over for most of the trial, and then on the sentencing date, the prosecutor stood up before with his closing arguments to the jury and to the courtroom and stated that we have no evidence that Reverend Pinckney committed this crime, but we know he did it. And the judge announced that and gave instructions, benign instructions to the jury, that we don't need evidence for a conviction. So the jury convened for about an hour and came back and found guilty on five counts that he was charged with of election fraud. And the judge announced that he was sentencing him from 30 to 120 months in prison. And now, that was on December 15th of 2014.
Now, so, two things, Mr. McKay.
Sure.
They convicted him on supposed five sheets where dates were changed. Now, I'm quite sure that he generated thousands of people in a recall petition, but they were talking about five sheets.
Five sheets.
And it was an all-white jury that convicted Reverend Pinckney in the city of Benton Harbor, which at the time was 92 or maybe a little more at that time, percent black.
Yeah, you're correct. At that time, there were more. There was about 96% black.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting in this, because when we heard and sat and listened to these jury trials in relationship to some of the shootings that had went on, the senseless and barbaric shootings that went on amongst these young males in relationship to this police, where you even had the camera, and only making this as a parallel that the jury still, if I heard you right, said hearing the judge and the prosecutor saying that there is no evidence, went and found Reverend Pinckney guilty. Now, what sense does that make?
The sense that that makes is a... We go back to the Jim Crow genocide black code laws that were set up specifically for black people. It's a double standard process.
And this is 2014.
Oh, yes. That was 2014. Now, mind you, when you have... And the entire atmosphere, the environment in Benton Harbor, that county is Berrien County. And we refer to it many times as Berrien County, Mississippi, because that's the kind of treatment you get functioning in that particular county. the murders that continue to go on, as though you were in Mississippi. They're finding young men. There were seven young men who were found floating in a river, in the St. Joseph River, which separates St. Joseph from Benton Harbor. One of the young men, and Reverend Pinky, I learned this from him. One of the young men who was floating in that river was castrated. The authorities conducted an investigation, came back, said there was no foul play. Just this year, I believe it was two young men were found lynched, hung in their jail cells. They've investigated and came back and said there was no foul play. This is suicide. So this continues, the Sandra Bland type treatment that they're getting there. And there's no recourse, I mean, except that, there was suicide, and we had no control over it, so there was no foul play.
Mr. McKay, give our listening audience the river that separates Benton Harbor from the other city of St. Joseph. It's a similar dynamic on the other side. St. Joseph is almost predominantly white, or is almost 100% white.
Yeah, St. Joseph, you're correct. St. Joseph is basically a white community.
Okay.
But it's separated. The river, I would say, is about 100 feet wide. That separates St. Joseph from Benton Harbor.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You can see that the things that, because when Reverend Pinckney had been on with us maybe two or three times from prison, and he talked about him being in solitary. Now, at that time when we talked, you know, Reverend Pinckney's not a young man, and to have a man in solitary, it's not like he was a disruptive, you know, the purpose of all of those type of things. Having him in solitary. You mentioned that you sent him several books for him to read, and they wouldn't allow him to receive books. All of those tactics are to break him. It goes back to what you stated about slave codes. You know, when we were on the plantation, a disruptive slave, and I'm not even talking about one that tried to run away, a disruptive slave was beaten in front of the rest of our ancestors to strike fear in the rest of the plantation that they don't want them doing this. So these things that they're doing to Reverend Pinckney is to break him. I mean, everybody can see it clear, and I know that you can. Talk about him, and before you get to that, we talked off air, and you talked about you sending him several selections of books that never reached him. Talk about that and their response, or if they gave you any response to them not allowing him to read some of the literature that you would send.
Well, yeah, I did. In fact, there's some kind of, and they use the excuse that, you know, that books can be altered to include contraband and other confiscatable materials. And they give you a list of acceptable publishers that the books can come from. And I imagine that these people, because the prison system itself is the prison industrial complex is set up is geared so that these people can continue to get rich off the demise of our people, you know, from slavery up to today. It's still the whole process that we've been recycled. And in order to continue to get dollars out of our people from the purpose they were brought here for, it was strictly economic, and then it developed into a racism or racial process. But one book in particular that I had sent to Reverend Pinckney six times, "The Choice" by Samuel Yett, which. That book was written in 1970, and it gave an account of what this nation was developing into for our people, and it was titled The Choice, Black Survival in America. And it comes out of, I'm sure it was Samuel Yett, because we studied that book when it was first published in 1970, and we realized that a disaster was looming, and we have not prepared for that disaster. And that's why I wanted to give Rem Pinkney that book, because he had never seen it. He'd seen the Kerner Commission reports, which I'm sure Samuel Yett reviewed, and that's where the book came from. But that one particular book, and there's some others, I'm not sure which others have not reached him, because they, I believe they held him on at the desk so his wife could pick them up. But The Choice, I know I sent that book 6 times, and he has not been allowed to get it 1 time. And that's a very critical book to study what was being planned and what the demise of our community was set up to be based on the actions and of the government. And how we were to perish.
You know,
the actions that were going on.
Now, Brother Richard is more of an avid reader than myself. Brother Richard, were you familiar with that title?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I'm trying to recall my view of it, you know, because I read it so long ago. But it is a required reading when you're talking about the transformation of the African-American community. Coming out of, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Mr. McKay, coming out of the Kerner's report, because some seeing the whole thing of, you know, the colonization process being put in play. And as others, I think, came in around, the book about the No Need for the Negro, which
Samuel, with Sidney Wilhelm.
Right. Came out
Who
around.
Who Needs the Negro?
Who Needs the Negro came out around, you know, also as something that showed that as the transformation of the society in general,
right.
What place Africans, Americans would play. You know, they and I believe Mr. Yett was a journalist, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he was a journalist. He worked for Newsweek, and he was a correspondent in Washington at the White House. And when the book was published, Nixon was in office, and Nixon, they got wind of it, and they contacted Newsweek and informed them that if they allowed, they wanted this book off the, they didn't want it to be circulated, but they were too late. It was already on college campuses. So once they realized that, they contacted Newsweek and told them they wanted Samuel Yett out of Washington, otherwise they would not have access to the White House. So Newsweek approached Samuel Yett and told him that they, you know, they gave him a choice that he has to leave, and he refused. So they fired him, and he sued. He won his case.
It's powerful commentary. And that period, the writers, the thinkers of the time were really, as you say, was preparing us, but at the same time, a lot of us wasn't becoming prepared.
Absolutely.
For the transition.
You know, you told me, Mr. McKay, that's how you met Reverend Pinkney. When you used this book to, at the time, you were members of the NAACP, and you said you went to some of the leadership in reference to his opinions in the book. Share that with our listening audience.
Well, actually, I chaired the political action committee there at the NAACP for a brief period. And I used the Kerner Commission report. I had purchased 17 copies of that Kerner Commission report because I felt it was a document that should be reviewed and acted upon from the NAACP standpoint. But the a member of the political action committee was very tight with the president at the time of our branch, objected to it. And we went over a brief battle over why that book, why the document should be reviewed and acted upon by the political action committee with the NAACP. But they won out. So I ended up stepping down from that position. But it was the Kerner Commission report, which is officially titled the U.S. Riot Commission Report. What happened? Why did it happen? What can be done about it? Report on the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders. That was when Johnson in 1966 suspected that the communists were behind the riots that were disrupting cities across the country. And they came back after doing this report because they had they placed the former governor, Otto Kerner. That's why they call it the Kerner Commission Report, because he's a former governor of Illinois. And he was placed, and there were other conservative, they were considered conservative members placed upon that committee to study why these riots were going on. And I think Whitney Young was one.
I think Roy Wilkins, I think.
Roy Wilkins, Edward Brooke of mm-hmm. Massachusetts, the former, senator from Illinois. But anyway, they came back, and what they discovered was that the riots were occurring, and they came back and they stated in summary that, you know, we've reviewed this, and we found that the problem is not in the black community. It's the white community. We created these issues. We finance it. We condone it, and we maintain it, and said, we have a choice. That's when in this, I believe it's summarized in there a couple of times. We have a choice. We can assist them in coming out of the problems that we created or get rid of them. And that's where Samuel S. steps in and says that their decision was to get rid of the problem rather than correct it.
So that's
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You finish your thought.
No, that is the reason I went through and gathering that report to have it and so that we could be acted upon more vigorously than it had been before, because once they Johnson got that, and someone said later on that it wasn't Johnson who decided not to address that. That came from some other groups, members of groups that didn't want to see the issue addressed to resolve the issues of our community being so devastated during that period.
You know, that would have been the perfect, when you said that you chaired this political action commission at that time and wanted to deal with some of the issues in it. You know, Richard, and that's been 50 years since that report. You know, Richard, yes. we go, you know, because I read over some of that. We'll do a show where we talk about some of those things in that report with what government officials at that time wrote in reference to the quote-unquote problem, the Negro problem. I'll use that term, the Negro problem.
Oh, yeah.
And it's crazy when you read it. And if, for our listening audience that haven't read it, we'll touch on it maybe next week or whatever. And in the interim, I've advised people to read that Kerner Commission report. See what they said in reference to our community and the solution, the so-called solutions that they were proposing.
Right.
They know right. exactly what the problems are. They created them.
Oh, yes. That's right.
So we really have to make a decision. You know, I'll steal his title. We have to make a choice as a people to what we intend to do. The choice is on us. They've already made the choice. Their choice.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, I have to use the metaphor that is in my mind, though, that the challenge was, and Mr. McKay, you raised it when you dealt with the tension within the NAACP as you were trying to present this. You also raised it with the mayor of the city in relationship to what he didn't do. And as far as here is a black mayor in a black community, and these conditions exist, and it's blatant that Reverend Pinckney was addressing that, wanted that to be addressed. Well, that y'all wanted that to be addressed. And you also raised that the period of who was on the report, knowing, and I'm talking about black people knowing, and in spite of us knowing, and I'm talking about black people in certain positions, knowing, and in spite of us knowing or accepting the information being presented to us, do nothing to assist in the change in the developing of the community that would be helpful compared to what was what is. Because if you look at the numbers today of unemployment, poverty, it's the same numbers almost exactly. You're talking about 2-3 generations away as it was in,
right.
at the time of the riots.
That's right. There's been no progress.
Mr. McKay, you've been in constant contact with Reverend Pinckney since he's been behind bars the second time, and he was in one of the worst prisons in Michigan, Jackson State Penitentiary. I know they moved him since then. Talk about him and his spirit. You know, and let me say this, because I want you to, as much as you want to reveal in reference to that, talk about it with our listening audience. But I want to say this. You know, for a man that have fought all of these years for black folks, Reverend Pinckney is a reverend, and he's a socially active reverend.
Yes.
Now, Reverend Pinckney could be like the majority of reverends and preachers, especially black ones around this country, to just holler and scream in the church and talk about the Lord's going to take care of these problems and just take the people's money and just enjoy himself. But Reverend Pinckney wasn't like that. He seen that word that he was reading, and he knew that he had to do something in his life to make these things come to pass. And as in reference to fighting for his people. Now, it's understandable that after all of these challenges and being put behind bars away from his wife and loved ones, fighting for our people, that he would say, you know, I'm tired. I just want to go home, and I don't want to deal with this anymore. That would be understandable in my eyes. I'm not Reverend Pinckney.
That would be understandable, yes.
I'm not Reverend Pinckney, and I kind of know that that's not what Reverend Pinckney intends. But talk about that, because I know they're going to be watching him while he's out on parole, and I know that they might not have told him this, but his activism is going to be one of the things that they are watching. Talk about it from your perspective as much as you want to talk about in reference to that.
Well, you know, Reverend Pinckney has, and he understands, and I think he understands much better than his wife is more of a housewife than, but she's been forced to get out and do the protests every week on Tuesday and at the courthouse on behalf of Reverend Pinckney. They accused him at one point when he was in Jackson prison of attempting to smuggle a message to his wife. So they placed him in solitary confinement for a week and removed all of his privileges. I imagine whatever privileges he has, like going to the library or having phone privileges. So that stuff. And at that point, he was out of the county. And because he was fighting the emergency manager, who was appointed by the governor, he was fighting that process. The governor's hand is dirty with this, the governor of the state of Michigan. And Reverend Pinckney, he understands the entire scope of what this process is, and people who he suspected would support him did not. I'll just tell you that I went to a fundraising dinner he had during the period of him prior to him going on trial. Danny Glover went to Benton Harbor and had a nice dinner at a good reception and what have you, and Ben Pinckney hosted that whole process.
Yes.
And then afterwards, Danny Glover could not be found. In fact, I attempted to call him. And at one point, I believe they said he was out of the country. So, you know, which is understandable. He's an actor. He's an international actor. So we weren't able to get the kinds of support for him. And you mentioned other people who would perhaps step down or say, oh, I'm tired. I was on the L, and I won't use the derogatory term I use for Sharpton. I'll be respectful on this show. Al Sharpton, I called him 6 times. The first time I called, he was doing his monologue, and he said, we're looking for marathon activists to get out here and do this work. So I said, okay, I dialed this. I got through. And I spoke with him. I said, oh, you know, Reverend Sharpton, you know, you said you're looking for marathon activists. I have one who has been wrongfully arrested, convicted, and imprisoned over in Benton Harbor, Michigan, Reverend Edward Pinckney. You know, he's fought the Whirlpool Corporation. So leave your number. I'll make sure my producer gets back with you. That was 2 years ago.
Oh, so you didn't talk to him on the air?
Oh, yes. I spoke with him on the air. In fact, I've spoken to him 6 times on the air. And the last time I spoke to him about Reverend Pinckney, he said, oh, yeah, you called about that before. So,
you know, he knows about Reverend Pinckney. You know, I know you don't want to call him any names, but, you know, some of these guys.
Reverend Sharp Turd, that's what
they call him. These guys are, they got a lot to answer for. They got a lot to answer for. He calls himself the nation's number one civil rights leader. You got these men that are really fighting. That are really fighting. That end up behind bars on false charges. And all he's out here doing is collecting money for his organization. And it's been proven that he's worked with the FBI. It's already proven. It's no allegation.
Yes. In fact, I called him just recently. I had the sister of a brother who, over in Benton Harbor, this was December 15th of 2015. This young man would sell, he sold bootleg media, you know, videos or music or whatever.
He would pass through
the same route going to mall every day to sell his videos or his music. And this business owner, some white business owners, the one guy confronted him, David Krieger. He came out and he approached the guy's name is Roy Thompson. Said, young man, don't pass through my property. So the brother was passing on an address, a property next to where he was. He walked off his property to confront him. So he pointed to the ground. He said, I'm going to stand on your property here. And he expressed expletives and reached for his gun, which was in his holster, you know, because they have concealed or open carry, whatever they have over in Michigan. He reached for it, so the young man started to run. And his partners in the business came out. They were perhaps 50 feet away and said, they called him Crockett, Davy Crockett. Crockett, get that nigger. And in the meantime, the young man is running. They started shooting at the young man, Roy Thompson. And he had a gun in his pocket because he had been stuck up. So he turned around. While he was running, he was shooting back. And there was an eyewitness to this whole scene. And this Roy Krieger was hit twice in his chest. And they immediately accused Roy Thompson, the black man, of killing Davy Crockett.
Okay.
And they arrested him. He was charged. They never did ballistics on the bullets that killed this David Krieger. They didn't do any. In fact, the sheriffs altered the scene. They drug his body back onto the address next door to where he was shot, from where he was shot, and placed his body there to show that, to give the impression that this young man approached him to rob him or somehow accost him on his property, but he was off his property, but they pulled him back on his property to set up the scene that this young man. But anyway, this young man was convicted, same as Reverend Pinckney. I think there was one black on the jury for this particular case. But when the 911 call went in, the attorney had it played on the air, and the guy called his friend or business partner or brother called in and says, this nigga just killed my friend. And if he comes back over here, we're going to hang him. Now, that constitutes a hate crime because what they did. It was never reported as required to the state police. And Reverend Pinckney would have fought for this young man the same as he fought for other wrongful, unjust activities over there in Benton Harbor. But this young man was convicted, and he was given 60 years in prison. And we're still fighting now to get him through the Innocence Project to have his case reviewed. But Reverend Pinckney would have been fighting for that just like that. Like the two young men, there have been two men hung in the jail cells. One was 8 feet above the floor. I think they both are 8 feet above the floor, hanging from a vent. But they claimed that there was no foul play in these particular hangings, and they said that there were suicides. So these are some of the things that Reverend Pinckney is not tired over. He will continue to fight, I'm sure, once he gets out of there. But his wife is going to have him on lockdown for a week once he's released. So I guess after that, I'm sure he'll be willing to call into your show, or she will be willing to allow him to call into the show after 1 week of being on lockdown at home.
Yeah, well, it's understandable, and I don't blame her for keeping him close to her once he gets out.
Right.
Mr. McKay, I want to thank you for being there for him the whole time that he was in, arranging for him to be on our program, talking with other folks so he could get his message out. And, some of the people that didn't do their responsibility to help a man that was out there fighting for our people, they'll have to answer for those things, especially the ones that call themselves, quote-unquote, reverends.
Most certainly. And the mayor who was ultimately defeated, James Hightower, who Reverend Pinckney was had circulated the petitions against. Now, he was replaced by another black man, Marcus Muhammad, who attended Reverend Pinckney's. I would see him at Reverend Pinckney's trial.
Okay.
But after Reverend Pinckney was tried and convicted, this guy, he fell off the scene. I mean, he's gone into the same category as James Hightower. He's in Whirlpool's pocket. He talks about how great Whirlpool is for Benton Harbor, and Whirlpool is a pariah in the black community there. They mean the black community no good, except to get them out.
Wait a minute, Mr. McKay. Now, you mentioned that this young man was in Reverend Pinckney's corner in the beginning.
Yes, he would attend the trial. He spoke very favorably of Reverend Pinckney.
You know,
current mayor.
I'll have to look back at my records, but I remember when I first got in contact with Reverend Pinckney, he either mentioned to me, because I thoroughly recall that it was a Muslim brother that was active in, and it might be the same gentleman. So wow, so he's the mayor now.
Yes, he's now the mayor.
Wow.
I have to ask this, Mr. McKay and Elliot. It was obvious that Reverend Pinckney had the community support. How does the community, now that he will be coming out on parole, what is the barometer that you see as far as the relationship between the general community of the area and Reverend Pinckney now? As now seeing once people get in these political machineries, what happens? What would you say is the support by the community in general for Reverend?
The community is supportive, but the community is scarce because I'm sure the bulk of the strong people, the strong supporters there in Benton Harbor have been gentrified or have been, they fear for their lives. Like the police now, that's the excuse for shooting black men in the back. We fear for our lives, and that language is placed there by the courts. But as far as the community being supportive of Reverend Pinckney, it's there only in words and not so much in actions. I think I've seen more support coming from collectively around the country as opposed to directly from there in Benton Harbor.
Okay.
Or Berrien County.
And I think because we hear this, since I've been able to co-host with Elliot and the people he brought on, we hear this in a regular consistent basis as far as the community in general, whether it's scared or whether I like the way you phrased it, being able to move more vocally supportive than actually demonstratively supportive, because that's the kind of thing that we'll need from community people when true leadership comes to the table, is that they have to be able to show their demonstrated support for that leadership, or they're left to be out on the wings, and these here surrogates of the establishment, as they call it, or the state, or the corporation, even though they're black, becomes the people who calls the shots, and we still don't get what we need.
No. The communities have been, especially in our community, even here in Chicago, you would think that you would have more of a conscious process coming out of Chicago. You know, it's supposed to be an enlightened community, but I've seen more enlightened people coming out of perhaps maybe Mobile, Alabama than here in Chicago, because everything is so dumbed down. The politicians here have sold out the community to keep their office or to get their family or friends in, as opposed to the community in general. And that's across the country. That's why they place these minions in place to expedite this process that we're in now, the disaster we're in. Because as Samuel Yep pointed out in his book, what the looming issues that were coming to these countries coming to these cities across the country, that we're in trouble, and we're living it today. And your Doom Day festival you spoke of, here we have the African Festival of the Arts, but it's more commercialized. You know, you see more Chrysler or AT&T. It's not a cultural process that it was originally set up to be. And I know one of the original organizers of that festival he quit after they started to be more commercial in their presentation to the community. So they have more, it's not a cultural, but it's more of a commercial corporate structure. They've taken it over, just like the Kwanzaa was started out as a cultural event. Now it's more commercial, Christmas.
Mr. McKay, before we let you go and transition to our second guest that's coming on, give out any information that you want to. I know that Reverend Pinckney's legal fight against what happened to him is not over. Anything that you want the listening audience to know, and go ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, I need to send you that, Mr. Booker, and I thought I had done that before, but he's been granted a hearing with the State Supreme Court there in Michigan to present for him to present his case, and also the Berrien County judiciary has been invited to come in and to present new information other than what they presented before, because I'm sure his attorneys in their appeal process have shown that he's been wrongfully convicted, but they make you jump through hoops in order to rectify any wrongs that have been done. So I think in a few days he has a hearing, or perhaps a week, he has a hearing set up in the State Supreme Court in Michigan to argue his case to exonerate, to clear his name and to vacate his conviction. And I'm sure that what they bring in the evidence that the fact that the prosecutor said, we don't have any evidence. And he stated that in the courtroom. and the judge indicating that we don't need evidence for a conviction. You know, what we have on trial here today, no evidence is needed. So I will forward that over to you. It's just an announcement that he has an opportunity to go before the Supreme Court in Michigan, to the state Supreme Court in Michigan, to argue his case.
Okay. And we'll be in touch with you. And again, give my regards to Reverend Pinckney, and I'll be talking to him hopefully after his wife kind of eases up on him a little. But it's understandable.
Right. Dorothy Pinckney. She's very adamant about this. He will be on lockdown for 1 week, the first week he's out.
Okay.
And I'll let her know also.
Mr. McKay, I want to thank you for your activism, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you, Mr. Booker. And thank you. Take care. I'll continue to listen in.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
We'll be right back with our second guest that's going to be with us, activist Chris Umapapa. Chris is with us to talk about African human rights defender, and he'll be here to talk about the situation that black folks face in Libya. We have scarce news reports on what's going on in Libya, especially in relation to black folks there. But we'll get some details on what's really going on from Brother Chris Umapapa. We'll be right back after a brief word.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest that was with us in the first hour of the program. Mr. Robert McKay was with us, activist and spokesperson for Reverend Edward Pinckney. Then, again, I want to thank him for being with us to share what was going on with Reverend Pinckney. Is a pending release on June 13th. And I'll be looking forward to him being on the program sometime in the near future to kind of talk about his experiences and his plans moving forward. It would be good to hear from Reverend Pinckney and back home with his loved ones. Tonight we're going to transition to a second portion of our program to talk about what's going on with our brothers and sisters on the continent, in Libya in particular, and we'll be talking about it with activist and African human rights defender Chris Umapampa is with us this evening. Brother Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for the invitation to the program.
I thank you for being with us on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing, Brother Pampa?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. Okay. My name is Chris Umapampa. My origin, I come from Kenya, but I've been working mostly with African immigrants who crossed the sea through the Libya borders. I'm already today, tonight, maybe to share with you some of the experiences about the lives of many they undergo.
You know,
I don't know.
No, I'm glad to have you with us, Brother Chris. You know, we've been getting sparse reports. In fact, no reports on what's going on in Libya, especially with our people there. You know, you hear different stuff coming off the African continent in reference to ISIS and AFRICOM is there, but you don't really get a lot of the on the ground, and you'll see different propaganda reports if they want to talk about Boko Haram and other stuff, but you don't really get what's going on in certain countries, especially countries that the United States have destabilized. Let's talk about Libya, because you're on the ground there. You're dealing with brothers and sisters trying to help them. Before you talk about what's going on now in Libya, give our listening audience a little background or flavor of what was going on in Libya with the blacks that had migrated to Libya before the fall of Gaddafi's government.
Okay, maybe to answer, I would like maybe to be precise mostly to the points and also to maybe to give accurate information for what is on the ground. The first thing, maybe the issue of the Gaddafi fall, maybe we can now blame maybe those is something maybe the government, the European Union, maybe the American states, they know what was the interest in Libya. We know the interest maybe which was there for the oil, maybe the interest of other issue. Which made the Gaddafi fall to be able for many immigrants to come in Europe. For me, apart from before the fall of Gaddafi, we had a very few number of immigrants who were crossing from Libya going to Europe. I think maybe the problem the problem if you find the story, how the people they say it or how it is, I think Gaddafi was trying to create something about African unity, about the issue, was trying to create his own money with putting on the gold, you understand?
Gold standard.
This was a very, they wanted to form their own money, which was, he wanted the money to be moved, to be used as an African symbol, which was like to be rounded with gold and whatever. So this one was also a very big threat to the West. And
Some of us think it was the major threat to have gold as the basis of trade in relationship to African countries, especially in relationship to the oil, because the United States would have to use gold as a means of purchase compared to dollars.
That one was the point. So the other issue was, how can we try to remove this man in power? That's what the question was. So they had to form some allied powers to remove the Gaddafi in the power. That's why you had people like France was the first country to start the invasion. Well, Gaddafi also was trading with the Italians, but they used it as the base. But when Gaddafi knew that it was becoming too hard for him, what he do? He just decided not to open up the borders. That's why the time from that time, we had many immigrants crossing because he decided. Because in Libya, if we had a good government, I don't think people, they can cross the sea going to Europe. Because the border controls will be there too much. So also some of the countries we can blame in African context. African as a... most of the countries we have destroyed, maybe America with the rest, they have destroyed. It makes most of the people to cross coming in Europe thinking it's a better life. Well, when they reach there, they're almost less subjected to the second slavery.
Okay.
Most of the Africans, those who cross the sea, sometimes you can ask someone, how much do you pay an aeroplane to fly from Africa to Europe? You can find maybe $700. How much do you pay to cross the sea with the ship with those boats? Someone is saying he has to go in Libya to work, and then he has to be trafficked in Europe. Whereby it's also the traffic, it also they work with the government, with the international organization, which are working to rescue. Who are you rescuing? How do these people know how to drive the boat? How can you drive a boat for 10 hours if you have never been someone who drives the boat on the sea? These people that are trained. And also there's some interest of Europe maybe having immigrants coming in Europe, because some of the, if we don't have immigrants in Europe, some of the international organizations, those who work with the humanitarian, they'll never have an excuse to get money. So these are just a cartel of trade of interest people.
If I may, for just for a point of clarity, Elliot, because I wanted the point that Brother Pamela made seems to be important. Are you saying that European countries need immigrants, at least those migration, would be non-profit organizations, need immigrants to come to Europe because that's how they make money?
That one is true. If there's no immigration, if everyone can stay, if we don't have illegal immigrants, who are the benefits? Some of the governments, international organizations, humanitarian, and also some of them, if they come there, they're boldly subjected to an inhuman condition of slavery, modern slavery.
Brother Chris, before we get into the modern slavery that's going on now, talk about after the fall of Gaddafi's government, the ethnic cleansing that was going on in cities like Tawaga and some of the other cities that you were aware of. Tell our listening audience the atrocities that had occurred right after the fall of the government.
What led the fall of the government?
No. I said talk about some of the ethnic cleansing that went on in several of the cities there in Libya. I know that some published.
Okay, Libya.
Go ahead.
In Libya, we have types of Arabs, which are, we have the white ones, we have the black ones. You understand? That's when. So when Gaddafi was supposed to move in power, they had to use the other tribe to fight him. They had to create. They had to fund another group to beat Gaddafi out, so that to say that the government is being liberated from the dictatorship. Which was not the truth. Even for me, I can assure you, maybe after the fall of Gaddafi, I think the Libyans have suffered too much. In Libya, when Gaddafi was there, all Libyans could not pay electricity. Houses was built for free. If you give birth to a kid, you are given money. Now it is not there. It's not there. Now people they are suffering. The other day I saw, I think it's 2 days ago now, his kid has been released in jail. Why was he being arrested? Why was he not taken to ICC to be persecuted? If he really is that the work against humanity.
Brother Chris, another point I wanted to make clear that you said, in relationship to the downfall of Libya, another group had to be identified, which they now call the opposition. They called the opposition. And did I understand you to say that opposposition, there is African Muslims and
there's no opposition. These are just people who are made to be looked outside like an opposition. There's nothing was there like an opposition. Because it's the same people who Gaddafi was ruling with them in Libya. They're the same people who are built by the westernized to say now we want to deliberate. It's called the tactics here, it's divide and rule. With the westernized power to create their own interest, to pursue.
But they weren't African Muslims, though.
Yeah?
They were not African Muslims.
No.
They were Arab Muslims, primarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's that. And to follow, so that, you know, the point that you were making, Elliot, that this is what the people, those are the ones who are doing the persecution against Africans in Libya at present, those Arab Muslims.
Yeah, that one is true.
Brother Chris, let our listening audience know about the slavery. I played a clip. And I put it on Time for Awakening's Facebook page of an African brother that described the atrocities that go on every day in Libya. And he was so emotional behind it. He was crying. And then,
okay.
Go ahead.
In Libya, whatever normally happens, most of the time, most of them, if they are, because most of the Africans who cross Libya, they're not Libyans. These are people from Gambia, Nigeria, Guinea, Mali. So the issue which normally happens also, maybe it should also be clear, we should not say that it's the religion, whatever. Some of the Arabs, these are Muslim or Libyans, they normally separate. If you are Christians, you're put this side. If you are Arab, you put this side. Some of them, to survive these tactics, if you reach in Libya, you have also to try to learn some of Arab words, prayers, to be safe. Because sometimes they normally also separate. These are Muslims, stay this side. These are whatever, they are killed. But that's something which is very much awkward. Sometimes when you hear the testimony, someone telling you, my brother has been killed, whatever, whatever, because whatever, because for the he's not from this religion, which is true.
So it's...
So at the global level now, I don't know what is the role of the religion is playing about this mostly of uprising and many wars in the world.
So, in your estimation, or from what you have seen, they're not necessarily doing this by religion. They're doing this to all black immigrants that are in Libya.
No, apart from the immigrants, also it's done against the religion also.
Oh, okay, so it is the religion also.
Some people that also divide, some people even get divided according to the religion. I have some people tell me when you're in Libya, you say, who are the Christians? Stay this side. Who are Muslim? Someone you can try to say, hey, okay, me, I'm a Muslim. I will stay this side, but you're not a Muslim. So you'll be asked some of the pillars. If you don't know, you'll be killed.
So wait a minute. You said if they don't identify themselves in a religion, they were killed.
Yeah, some of them. You know, it depends who arrested you.
Okay.
You can be, because Libya is a Muslim state, or no? Although you also have Christianity, but Christians, they are more fewer than Muslims. So some of them at one stage, they are killed because of their religion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have any of the, now tell me something, Chris, from your estimation, because... the information or the atrocities that's going on, it has leaked out to other brothers on the continent. How is other brothers from other areas? You mentioned about some of the areas from Gambia, from Nigeria, yeah, from other areas. How are they still pouring into Libya if they're facing these type of things? Or do they not have the proper information to kind of stay away from that country?
The problem with this, some of these countries, why? Because if you find most of these young people who are migrating to Europe using this road, the first thing which we have with them, the problem, is illiteracy.
Okay, all right.
Which is a very big... the other issue, apart from the literacy, also they have poor governments. So they're forced to flee away from their country because of poverty. And the other way also we have the business for human trafficking. Like women, most of them, they normally come to Europe just to do prostitution. Because someone can buy someone, he brought in Europe, he stand, because they know prostitution in Europe, it pays too much for the ladies. For now, like now, the biggest challenge now you have, if you come in Italy, or maybe in Italy now mostly you'll find most of them there. Most of the men who come, they do begging outside the supermarkets. The second day, you'll find the ladies, they're doing prostitution. We have those one who have the problem for the documents. Then also you'll have the problem also for the social media. Someone can be in Europe, he's a beggar, but he's on the social media. But the kind of the photos he put on the Facebook, they're good ones. So it motivates the other one on the other side to think that Europe is a land of opportunity. Well, he could have stayed back in his country, even if he's earning less, he's able to develop. He can be able to stay a decent life.
Okay.
Some of them, yeah. It's not that you have to migrate to a new country. If you have no skills, you have nothing, what are you going to do? If you go there, you'll take care of an old person. Maybe you are a young person who was able to have skills. You could go to school to become somebody. But because of the pressure
also from the family, saying that I had my daughter, he went to Europe. But what is he doing? He's working in the farm. If he's a lady, she's standing on the road. Or maybe if he's a man, he's begging. But he doesn't. These are some of the things people, they don't say back home.
Okay.
So look, what I like to do, Brother Chris, is walk through the process of those who leave these countries, because it seems that from your discussion, is two types of tracks. Those who are able to carry them on the water, once they're able to get out their country and they get to this waterway to get to Europe, primarily the goal is to get to Europe. You need someone to pick them up, and some are used, instead of, I think you said, instead of planes, they may use these boats, or instead of roads, they may use this boat and navigate this water. Who are the people who are running the waterways that I'm assuming the immigrants have to pay? One,
That's a very good question. Because even for me, sometimes I normally ask someone, when you came, how many were you? You say we are 30. Who was driving? No, I was shown how to drive. By who? You are shown the compass, you are leading. Then you are told to walk, to go straight until you reach to the middle of the water, you'll be rescued. So when you are rescued, you are in the other side, because you cannot be sent away. Oh, no. That's the law. But also, there is also some interest with the organizations and also with some governments. Because an immigrant is like a commodity. He'll be able to work at a cheaper labor. Silently, he'll not complain because it's not legal. Also, the government will gain the money, maybe from saying they're trying to help the immigrants to integrate. There's a lot of money to try to do what? To make them to stay.
So yeah? You're saying that there are different European governments that have vessels that will pick up immigrants, and the goal for them is money being made by having this immigrant population. And
yeah,
also,
that one is true. That one is obvious. If there's no immigrant, who will work in the farms? How will they make money? Not even the governments. We also have the connection between the governments and some organization which are working with the immigrants. If there's no immigrants, they will not get funding. Who will they say they are helping? Who will they say they are helping? They must have a necessity for people to support.
So in one sense, isn't the government also calling for immigrants? People want to get out of the countries that they're, they're having their own challenges in for whatever reason, the various reasons, which we know.
Yeah, people immigrate for various reasons. I cannot say that all of them who migrate, they are genuine. We know there are some who are genuine. There are only those who come with flights, that are with visa. There are those who come, those who fly wars. And also we have, so we cannot say that the for coming this the proper way. So these are problems which is they cut among each other. There are some who are genuine. There are some who come for other whatever. So that's why maybe they put on the commission to try to separate, or maybe to interview. Why did you left your country? What was the reason? You understand?
Right. So following up, just to be clear on this point, there are European countries, say Italy specifically, that need immigrant labor in order to work the farm. Therefore,
they need them. They need them. They need them because they need them.
Yeah. So that evidently, Brother Richard, that's where the Arabs come in, because they call themselves playing the middleman. As a slave broker selling black folks to Europeans. Am I kind of right laying that out in layman's terms, Brother Chris?
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Okay, let me say, follow me. That's where the North African or the Libyan Arabs come in. They are playing the so-called middleman, as slave brokers selling brothers and sisters to Europeans.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you see some of our people that want to avoid this type of persecution are getting in boats and just trying to make the trip or the journey on their own.
So can you, you have mentioned a commission. So what is the commission role? I got the impression you say in this commission, they do some interviews of people who are able to get into Europe or are people who are leaving, who are who got into Libya. What's the name? What is the commission and what's their role?
Okay. The commission, it has a role of, it normally is a commission which has a local government or one person from the government. It has, it must have one person from humanitarian organization. Then it must have one person from UN representing the refugee, whereby then it has to have one interpreter or translator because due for the language barriers, because people, they speak different language. So the commission, someone is, once he reach, he's supposed to write the story, why did he left his country of origin, what made him. So if you left your country, you must have some reason. Either you left for political reason, or either you left for humanitarian reason, or maybe you left your country because maybe you had a problem either with your family whereby you are fearing your life. So the work for the commission is to try to evaluate to see if the story which you have given it is valid. So when they see the story is valid, you are granted the asylum. So you can be granted asylum political, or if you are a political activist, or maybe you can be given a humanitarian, maybe if you had a problem on a humanitarian ground, maybe because of war and whatever for your country. And also you have some other problems the commission can consider, because some of the people, others, they come from a Muslim country, you can be granted because of maybe to practicing your faith, or maybe also some, you can be given maybe depending if you are, there are some countries in Africa which they don't accept things like homosexual, lesbian, exphobia, you know, because some of the country, the issue of transgender is not very widely accepted. Some countries like Zimbabwe, that is something which is not there. Something like a place like Uganda. Some of their country, they have that tolerance. So it's always evaluated depending on many factors. Depending also on the, yeah.
What's the name of the commission?
Yeah?
What's the name of the commission?
No, the commission is just called the commission territorial, the commission for the area. The commission, it comprises one person represent the government, one person represent the police, then humanitarian. Is a refugee, or if you contact even the UN refugee, whatever, they know they also have alternatives in the commission.
So the International Organization for Migrated People, is that the mechanism that these different people role comes together under, or is this a different mechanism by the country, say the European countries?
No, International Immigration Council is an NGO on its own. It has its own mechanism. It has its own structures. Right. Although it tries to help with the immigrants. But when it comes to every country, it has its own system. It has formulated how it will be able to evaluate who to give asylum, who to give who to give humanitarian or who to give whatever.
So you're talking about the European countries that a lot of the Africans, if they successfully get there, this commission does the interviewing in order to see under what guise did they come.
Yeah, yeah. That's depending on the European Commission about the issue of human rights. I think they have an agreement among them, states, country which are in the European Union, whereby they set up the standard how to give an immigrant the document depending if he qualify certain condition.
Last question, Elliot, if you don't mind. So that group of people who are able to get to the commission are different than those who get sold into slavery to work on these farms or to work as prostitutes or who are killed.
Okay. They're not different.
Okay.
Do you know what normally happens? Once somebody reached there, he'll at the end of the day, he'll need a document. But once he's still waiting for the document, he needs to survive. He has his basic needs. Some of them, they're put in the camps.
Okay.
But some of them, they don't want to stay in the camps. They want to stay outside free. Some of them, they'll go to the camp, to the commission. Then the commission will give you negative because you can be given yes or no. If you are given no, you need to appeal or no. When you are appealing, you don't need to stay in the center. You are not being taken care of. So you need to stay outside to look for a lawyer, then to pay as if you are doing the appeal. So when you are doing appeal, how do you survive? So you need to work. So you need to try to look at other alternative ways of survival. So other alternative ways, maybe some other, also they have some will reach when he doesn't get the whatever, he'll just decide it's better he stay on his own, he'll be working, getting money, doesn't care about the document. We also have those one who want to have to become regular. They want to get documents so that maybe also they can be able to look for a decent life or maybe change life. There are others, maybe they have reached their, they say, now I'm in Europe, I cannot go back in Africa. There I was suffering, maybe here I can survive, or maybe if I don't, or the goodness, I ran away from where I was. So it depends. Then also you have some others, maybe after some time, they will decide, maybe just see this kind of life, he made a wrong choice. He can decide to go back home voluntarily, which also sometimes the government normally give those options. Whoever feel life is not good, you can just come, you report, and then you go back home, they can pay for you.
Brother Chris, as a human rights defender, African human rights defender, what is the response by either the African Union or the African nations or the UN to the atrocities, the human atrocities going on there? What is their response? Do you know of any maybe unified response or some responses by some of the governments there in reference to what's going on?
The problem now, some of the governments, they have no interest on the issue. Even if they can be on the interest, they just need that these people, they are sending back home money. But some of the governments, they are not very interested on the issue, because if the government, they could try to motivate their citizens, most of them, they don't need to go out, because once we are moving outside your country, we are losing our labor force. Oh no, we are going outside to work for other people's country. Well, you can remain in your country to make it productive. Although maybe also some of them, they leave because of the bad leadership in the African government. Because even you'll find the African government system is one of the worst somehow. And also they try to copy the European style, whereby they put too much debt on their citizens. So some of these people, even
they'll go to school to study, but they don't get an opportunity. So they feel it's better I go abroad. So abroad, where do they go? They'll come here and find someone, he went to school, he studied, even he has a degree. But he come abroad, what he do is doing construction job. Someone studied to be a teacher. He come here, she's doing babysitting. Because maybe in a country to do the teaching, he could learn $30, $300. If he come here, maybe learn $1,000. So, but he doesn't know that one is losing the value, because it's better to stay in your home even if you earn $200. But if you are in your country, you are able to develop. You are able to take the best of, you can move your country to the best level you can. Although also we need to network. We need also to learn new technologies from other countries. We need also to have exchange programs. But some of the problem also we can blame some of our governments, or also maybe also we can blame, because as the world now stands, no any country want to lose. Each country want to be superpower. Chinese want to be ahead. America want to be ahead. Africa also, they are trying. We are the first doing this one. We are, Japan is also moving ahead. So that's a very big challenge.
Well, you know, and I hear, and that's what leads to my next question. And I'm gonna take my time with this, because you mentioned in what you just said about governments setting up European style ways to deal with things. Let me ask you something as an African man that's dealing with, that's on the continent, dealing with these human rights issues. What is the biggest problem in your eyes? Now, I'll give you three different areas to look at. White supremacy, which colonialism, neocolonialism, or just corrupt African leaders that want to cater to European governments. Now, they might all be one and the same, but try to separate that and tell me, or tell our listening audience, what is the major problem now? Is it corrupt black leadership that want to cater to these European governments, or is it just the unseen hand that, for example, caused a disruption in Libya?
Okay. That's a very good question. The first thing I could like, not that I'm on being honest with the question, there's that element of white supremacy.
Okay.
And for me, I don't see it exist. I think sometimes, I know, there's that culture of seeing I'm superior. Although then maybe the second I can put the corrupt government systems, because any government also, we have to put checks and balances. Africa, we have that deaf ear. Do you know in Europe, even if we have that supremacy, white supremacy, there is also checks and balances. People are able to question. We have that freedom of people to question. In Africa, it's not easy sometimes. That's why you find most of, even to become a human rights defender, it's not an easy job. You can wake up at night, you find police outside your door.
Okay.
You can walk on the streets. You can be shot, and then you, whatever. You can drive the road. Your car can be stopped, and then that's the biggest challenge. But I can guarantee I can start with that white primacy, and then I can put the second on the bag or whatever, the African corrupt system.
Brother Chris, let me ask you another question, and I'll pass things over to Brother Richard if he has something else on his mind. Black politicians here in the United States, what do you think their response? And I'll give you an analogy, and then I'll ask the question. If you had a European government or a foreign government, I'm sorry, that was ethnic cleansing Europeans out of their country, that enslaved Europeans, that forced European women into prostitution, then you would have the United States and other European countries speaking on it. you would have white lawmakers here in the United States speaking on it and doing something about it. What responsibility do you think that black politicians in the United States have that sit in these government seats that should have the intelligence enough to know that their government that committed this atrocity when Barack Obama, the black president, was in office, that destabilized that African country, that caused this chaos to happen, this atrocities to happen? What responsibilities do these black politicians have to not only speak to these issues, but to do something about it, in your opinion?
For the black leadership in America, Obama is once, was maybe, you know, the media, how they were putting him, he was looking like a very good guy. But for the style, how he dressed, whatever. But for the African, what they need to know their history. They need to reclaim their dignity. I know some of the laws maybe in U.S., because I know I don't know the U.S. laws, but I have also seen, it's my first time to be in U.S., maybe I'm trying to see how life it is, what I hear from outside. But I have also seen, America also it has its own problems with race, with the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've tried to have a few discussions with some folks around blacks who have stayed here for long. Some of them I see they have many ideas. Not they have ideas. They know their history. They're trying to... The problem also we have, the betrayal of an African when they get to leadership, to try to work with the whites. But I'm not saying that we need to fight the issue of color. We are one. We are human beings. Our destiny is the same, but some of our black folks also, they try to change the tactics. Because maybe they want to remain in power, or maybe also for their personal interest, or also for the interest for the master. Which I think maybe America also has its own history with the black folks. So black folks, they know, so they need to take up the leadership role. They need to reclaim. They need to become more active in social injustices issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I can...
Go ahead, Brother Richard.
I wanted to... it's interesting that you raised that question, because I pulled up an article that where Cornel West spoke in February, and he said that this, in relationship to the CBC, that they, as it comes to foreign policy, looking at issues that have shown no righteous indignation to U.S. drone strikes, when it comes to the Middle East, when it comes to Libya. This is Cornel West making an assessment. This is, you know, of that. So it kind of, he goes on to say, when it comes to drone strikes, we haven't heard their voice, and it's a moral, spiritual issue. So the black politicians, but one thing that Brother Chris raised out when he was talking about the when you raised the question, the structure of in Africa of the leadership, whether you call it corrupt leadership, the danger of it. I've always paralleled the condition, the structural condition of black leadership here in solving the problems of black people and under the same kind of as the African leadership there. The only difference is African leaders have more direct control over those mechanisms that Brother Chris, you seem to raise. You as a you know, dealing in the field that you deal with, could be threatened. Your life can be threatened at any time because those African leaders control the military, control the police, control the press. They have influence, if not control, over these things, which have an impact on your work and therefore even your life, where the black leadership here, the condition is the same, but they don't have that kind of control over those institutions. That's what I see is the only difference. But the outcome in relationship to the people is the same.
Brother Chris, before you leave us this evening, talk about some of the brothers and sisters on the continent, their opinions on what's going on in Libya, in Zimbabwe, in South Africa, with the young people now starting to want redress as far as the land. They want Europeans out of their country. Talk about some of the our people's response to some of the young people and how they're voicing their opinions on what they want to see done. Is it are people scratching their head? Are they aware of a lot of these things? Because you talked about the illiteracy problem. Are they aware of a lot of these things going on in some of the other countries? Talk about it from your respect.
Okay, for my view about maybe a country like Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is another country, maybe the president has been very much vocal to try to reclaim Africa, but also the leadership is good, maybe it's changed, because you cannot tell me Mr. Mugabe, since he came to power, because what he just did, he just took the lands from the white people, then he gave back to the black, those who fought for the independence.
Mm-hmm.
Then because of his war with the West, especially the Britain and the Europe, they decided to put sanction.
Mm-hmm.
So this country, its currency, it's outside the market. If you go to Zimbabwe now, you'll find the country is run with American dollar. It's run with the Chinese yuan, the money. Any money is used to do business because their currency, it has been put outside.
Okay.
So this one, it has made most of the young people to run in South Africa. In South Africa, we have the same problem. Although Mandela fought for his people, but most of young African brothers, most of them there, they have also not taken up life more seriously. In South Africa, most of people who are working now, they are foreigners. Young boys from Botswana, South Africa, from Zimbabwe, they're the one who goes there to work. The South Africans, they don't work. Most of the young people, they will just want to be involved in the crime and other issues. And time is moving. Although we have young boy politicians, we have a political space in South Africa. But still young people, they still need to learn more. They need to reclaim and also to try to work hard to develop their country. It doesn't mean that your father was a farmer, you also need to be a farmer. You can need to study to become another person. So some of the problem we normally try to inherit from our parents. Or we try to, when we are born, we just take up the system which is there. We don't want to challenge the system, staying in a comfort zone. So that's another problem with these African countries, especially the one. You see a country like Gambia. Gambia, if they could not be able to fight this man, he never wanted to move away. And Gambia is a very small country with a population of 4 million. But we find almost 2 million young boys have run away there in Europe. How does that such country you expect it to develop?
Mm. Wow.
And how do you expect it to develop?
And if I'm not mistaken, Gambia is also a resource-rich country.
Gambia is a very rich country. It has many whatever. But also you find all these, most of the countries which you find there is stability, there's an interest. So you must find international companies from U.S., France, with these Europeans, they're there. Yeah.
Chris, Brother Chris, I want to thank you for your work and what you're trying to do to shine a light on what's going on in Libya and other areas where the United States have destabilized some of these African countries, and they throw a rock and hide their hand, so to speak. But I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. The door is always open to you to come back on the program to give us updates. You can reach out to me. You have my number. I guess you have any difficulty reaching me, we can reach over social media. But I want to thank you for your work and what you're doing.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was also my pleasure at least to have to be online and also maybe to share my little experience, although I was not very much prepared.
Well, I think you were very much prepared. I don't have any problem with what you presented. I think you gave our listening audience more information than what they've been getting prior to.
Okay.
I want to thank you for being with us. Brother Richard, any last things before Chris leaves?
No. And I also just want to thank you for the work you do. And please consider coming back and keeping us informed about this whole process of migration and what the commission is doing.
Okay.
Chris, I'll be in touch with you. Thank you, brother.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either. Mm-mm.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Now, what's happening in all the urban cities across America is that you got a process in place right now in urban redevelopment. They're using five techniques to totally wipe you out. One is called gentrification. They're going into all these major cities that used to be majority black population populated cities, and they are erasing you. In places like Detroit, Michigan, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. used to be the chocolate city. When I went there with President Carter in 1976, at that time, Washington, D.C. was 78% black. Now it's down about 42% black. Chocolate City is gone. Detroit, Michigan is going to be totally wiped out by immigrants pouring into the society. Since 1970 up to now, we've had 45 million immigrants coming to the United States. They came in over you, and they're displacing you. And then the second term they use besides gentrification to wipe you out is a thing they call privatization. You go into Detroit, Michigan, as they gentrify, they're going to take all the public resources and things that should be owned by the public, they're going to place them through privatization to the hands of the wealthy whites. Whites are going to buy your golf courses, your subway systems, your bridges, your tunnels. They're going to control your airports, your parks, your museums. Why? Again, because Anderson says, he who owns and controls the resources got the power. If you own and control nothing, you are totally, absolutely useless and expendable. And that's why nothing has changed for us, because we don't understand the system of gentrification and privatization. The other thing they're using to wipe you out in those cities is called metropolitan forms of government, where now they're going to do regional form of government, which means that the whites in the suburbs can come into those black cities and set up some kind of consortium to control what goes on inside those cities so they can extract the resources out of them. Another concept they use in those cities is called cool cities, which says cool cities mean bring in the gays and let them replace black folk. And that's the fourth scheme they use on you. And in Detroit, Michigan, using that as an example again, the governor there has already set up in movement a system where he wants to go to the president of the United States, Obama, and ask him for a green card system where he can start importing Chinese from China to make Detroit, Michigan the biggest Chinatown in the United States, even though that city had a 90% black population. They're going to bury blacks in Detroit, Michigan, underneath Asians coming into Detroit. And already in Detroit, Michigan, in Dearborn, right on the outskirts of Detroit, Arabs own 90%. 90% of all the businesses in the city of Detroit are owned by Arabs. Arabs and 90% black population must go to the Arabs to get what they want in terms of food, medicine, clothing, because they own all out of gas stations. You got 146 gas stations in Detroit, Michigan. Arabs now own 144 in a black city. Blacks own two gas stations out of 146. You own nothing. The rest, the hotels, are owned, and the 7-Elevens are owned by Indians. Asians are owning the laundries. They're owning the hair and wig shops, the nail shops. Blacks own nothing in a 90% black city. And that's why now Detroit went into poverty.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for Awakening. I want to thank our guest that was with us in the second half of the program, activist and African human rights defender, Brother Chris Umar Pampa, was with us to talk about what was going on in Libya, what is going on currently in Libya, and, you know, giving us more information that that we get on any of these news agencies that we popularly watch and listen to on the television. And you can give us a call for the, I guess we'll be on another 20 minutes or so. The phones will be open. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard, it was interesting. It was interesting conversation that we had with Chris, Brother Chris. And when I asked him the question about what does he feel now is the biggest problem on the continent, I gave him three choices, which some of them is kind of blurred lines because they kind of blend into one another. Right. He stated that to him it was almost a tie between white supremacy and corrupt black leadership wanting to cater to white supremacy.
That is the system, and that's why I was so. I'm glad you could, because I couldn't catch that, but I'm glad that we're all in agreement with that.
Now wait a minute, Richard. I don't want to cut you because I want you to keep your train of thought. Yeah. Now you notice how white supremacy always wants to separate us. Oh, you're American. They're right. Africans. You see some of our people here. Those Africans do this. They do that, and all kind of foolishness. But when you look at the real story, the real boogeyman, so to speak, behind this whole thing, you heard him point out the problem. It's the same problem we're facing here. White mm-hmm. supremacy and blacks that want to cater to it. It's the same problem. This man knows what he's doing when he creates divisions between our people. It's time for our people to wake up and stop these divisions. These problems that we're facing is common problems. We're dealing with a common enemy. You know, you look at these folks that run around, so-called Jews. They got a saying, never again. Now, you got the situation that's been happening in Sudan has been going on for a while. But this situation in Libya happened under the watch of the first black president, where he destabilized the country and cause other black people to be plunged into a slavery. He should be ashamed of himself. And blacks that support him, I don't care what they done said about him or what's going on, he should be held on the carpet for what's been caused in that country. These black leaders that run around talking about the, this and that, they're congressmen, they're senators. They would not, a white congressman or a white senator would never allow another country on the face of this planet to be holding whites in slavery, to be forcing white women into prostitution, to be selling black children and men and young men. They would never allow it. They would be speaking on these issues and something would be done about it. But you got black folks, because they consider themselves American, not saying nothing about other black folks being plunged into a situation of slavery. Because they're running from an economy that's being drained by the same government. This is crazy, Richard.
You know, it's what's interesting when Brother Chris said about the illiteracy rate of Africans. And you were tying the question in relationship. Maybe they couldn't know and therefore do. But when you get here, you can't use the same argument about us being illiterate. Therefore, we don't know, and therefore, we can't be aware of what is going on outside of our personal relationships or other things of that matter. So even though there's illiteracy there, supposedly people can't read and write, where most of them can speak 3 to 4 languages. Here, people can read and write and can only speak one language, and still the condition is the same.
You know what? And I'm glad you mentioned that. Even though he said about illiteracy being a problem there, and you said that illiteracy is not necessarily a problem here, But the one thing that's a common problem is ignorance. And I'm not talking about somebody being stupid. I'm talking about somebody not being having knowledge of issues. Our people here suffer from the lack of knowledge. Ignorance on a lot of these issues. Ignorance on these issues that we've been talking about tonight. And some of these people that are supposed to be in leadership is just as stupid as I don't know what. And some of them willfully are stupid. Don't speak up on it. Listen here. Obama was a very smart man. He know what was going on. He knows what's going on now. But he's, you know, he's reaping his benefits. You see a $60 million book deal, and he just bought an $8 million mansion in Washington. I mean, listen, he's living the life as far as he's concerned.
Don't make me start to go down there and be a, look, he's a manager. He just did his job.
Certainly. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you know, he just did his job. And let's not take, because I don't think that this new guy in town, he ain't nothing but a manager, quote unquote, supposed to be in a businessman, you know. But he ain't nothing but a manager learning how to do his job. And he's doing it, which is making sure, you know, I mean, this is a global thing, that the businesses and the financial institutions gobble up all the assets that Africans, either their natural asset, their personhood themselves, or their natural resource looking at the continent, to gobble that up under their control. And they'll put their henchmen in to assist in that process.
Yep.
Because they feel they get a benefit in the here and now, whether you call them politicians, whether you call them ministers, whether you call them heads of state, they get a benefit now compared to looking at the development of a people over time, their own people.
You know, you brought up a good point when we was talking to Chris. When Chris mentioned that a country like Gambia is a small with 4 million people. But he said over 2 million of the people are young people that didn't run out to Europe. He said, how can you assist your country if you're running out of the place? And you mentioned that Gambia is a very rich country. In fact, all of the countries in Africa is very rich with mineral resources. So if they're running out of the country because they don't have jobs in their own place, you got these other countries, United States and all this, gobbling up everything, just like you just stated.
And it's a serious blow. And it's not just happening in Africa. That's the challenge you see going on in South America with Venezuela, Colombia, and other countries that are trying to utilize their resources or try to curtail. You know, the West is saying, oh, they want it. And, you know, they want it. And any person that gets in the way, they're working out to get rid of them. The new one seems like is the head of state of the Philippines. They after him.
Boy,
so doing what we would say, you got to do something about, you know, these drug dealers and the scourge of drug. Now, once these whites started taking opiates, you start hearing these white congressional people talking about clinics and,
yeah, it's a problem now.
I mean, it's they like won't go all out, you know, because that's it. But when Africans were taking whether you call it crack, I mean, that created a devastation and that just added, you know, and then being and made it blatant, you know, that, well, the vial of crack you sell going to give you 20 years, and the cocaine, no, the vial of crack you hold. That's like you ain't even got it sold, you hold. But the cocaine that this person is holding, they just going to get off. They're going to get some rehabilitation. I mean, this is law. This is systemic. You know, it's white domination for that's been, you know, of the playbook of over and over again. And that's why I think it's so important when we're talking to Brother McKay, when he mentioned the point of the Reverend is, you know, doing good work, the community is still not clear whether they want to support him. And how can you know, they could put in a politician that'll do them wrong, but they can't circle the wagons around someone that's looking out in their best interest.
Let's try to grab a call. And then the lines are open. We'll be on for the next few minutes or so. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let's grab 646. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you, Brother Elliot and Richard? Listen, I just want to tell you, man, as always, you put forward one of the finest shows that a brother could do in talk radio, man. Nobody do it like you, Elliot. Nobody. You know what I mean? I only think there's one person that could compete with you as far as I'm concerned. That's my brother, Keedy. Other than that, nobody do it like you, Elliot. You need to be on terrestrial radio, getting these Negro peens' minds straight and in line with the agenda to move us forward as a people, man.
Well, it ain't just me. It's Brother Richard. Brother Richard's on here. It ain't just me.
Richard is your sidekick, so you know your sidekick is always just as good in case you decide, like Friday, you didn't want to come in so you could look at the basketball game.
Oh, no, that wasn't what it was.
But Richard wanted to watch the game, too. So y'all just decided we're not going to work on Friday. We're going to have a couple of brewskis and watch this game so that tomorrow night these devils could make $22-some million to keep the racket going. But, you know, what I really wanted to say to you, Brother Richard, is we as a people at some point in time are going to wake up to what's going on, to the games that are being played against us with this media. Because I don't know if you noticed this week that they had the Dog and Pony Show going on with this guy, Comey. And in the process, your boy McConnell was in the Senate just doing his thing, setting things in play to destroy the lives of millions of people in this country. And it seems like, you know, the media, they so stuck on this Russian nonsense, Comey, and this whack job that they got in the White House, that the American people in the process are going to suffer. And they think that because of the narrative that they're putting forward, that the Democratic Party is going to come and save our asses. But the sad thing is, and the truthful thing is, the Democrats are no different than the Republicans. They don't have no type of plan, agenda, or anything to counterbalance what these animals are doing. It's like they are the biggest rapists of the minds of African people there is, and you know, we don't even recognize it. You know, it's always something coming out in the newspaper lately about your girl Hillary Clinton, who's responsible basically for what happened over in Libya. I wish you would have asked the brother that you had on about that. About him, and then she had the prisoners from Arizona working in the big house.
Yeah, I saw that.
She was the first cracker lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just little things like that just goes to show. More or less, they aren't even dealing with what she's done to the Haitian people. Now there's talk about Haiti becoming a part of the Commonwealth. You know, I mean, it's like we as a people don't even have a true agenda. I'll give you a perfect example. Every week I listen to a show, if I can wake up, in New York. It's the Open Line. You know, it's the only really black talk show that they have in New York City. And every week, man, they got, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans and Trumpy Trumpster, you know, what he's doing and all of the nonsense at play. And, you know, they always had that special Negro come on, like Eddie Clark Jr., over there, the head of the Black Studies Department at Princeton. Now, I asked this question, and, you know, people always get mad at me when I make this comment. How can you trust a Negro that goes on the morning show, Morning Joe, and becomes a regular, evolves into a contributor And how do you trust somebody when it was basically Morning Joe that gave Donald Trump his platform in a sense to make him into what he became, but now they done turned his back on him because I guess they must have realized he was a bigger nut job than they thought he was. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it just becomes frustrated how we support these Negroes who only want to put us into whiteness, who don't want to put us into nothing that is regarded as Africanness, don't want to do nothing to liberate us and make us have a place here supposedly in this country that is independent of the racism and all the other nonsense that we have that attacks us as a people. You know, it just becomes really sad to see that black men and black women cannot define themselves as Africans, but always have to define themselves as some damn integrationists. Always looking for a situation to diversify into the devil's culture. How the hell do you want to put yourself in the going to hell? For what? What are you getting for going to hell? What do white people give us as a people that make us love them so much? I don't understand. It's not natural, to be honest, to love your oppressor. I don't understand. How do you forgive somebody that constantly got their foot on your neck, constantly abusing you, constantly beating you, constantly tormenting you? How do you love somebody like that? I want to be around them. I don't understand the psychology of us as a people, man.
I hate to do this, but what you said, the last piece that you said, brings up that you know, they was praising this movie. I think it's called 50 Shades of Grey. And isn't that really about someone abusing somebody and they loving it?
I didn't see the movie. I'm not in the statism of whiteness. I don't get caught up in that type of madness. That's not natural to me.
But if that's
what it was about, then you know, you may be right.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm not gonna lie to you. My old lady read the book, and I asked her why she was reading it. She told me that her girlfriend had read it and recommended it to her, and I was going to go there with her, but, you know, I was in the mood for some loving that night. So I said, let me keep my mouth shut because I don't want to miss out on no good nookie. So that's why I left that one alone. But, no, I mean, it's, you know, could that be what it is, Richard and Elliot? Cause I'm really trying to figure it out because, you know, so I'm confused. I don't understand it. You know what I mean? And it's getting to the point to where it's getting kind of worse to look at what's happening to us as a people and the responses that we're making to it based on, you know what? Is it that we fear the reprisal that will be brought against us for acting in a certain way towards white people and questioning their behavior or us? I mean, I don't understand. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm puzzled. I'm not even going to lie about it.
Well,
I'm confused at some point.
Well, Richard, you want to go a few minutes past?
What Brother Jay raises is a like really important development because I mean I keep using the same historical piece about in Philadelphia and with during the revolution, these Africans that were here, and some would say now that they were the elite, right? There was a choice because the British offered them, and this is the nuances of history, right? But I think history is the best teacher for us if we look at it. The British offered enslaved Africans from Virginia to be a part of the Ethiopian regiment in order to fight the colonists. They come through Philadelphia in 77. Those Africans, and asked those Africans, did they want to go come with them and become free or stay with the colonists, especially after they left. there was Africans who decided to not go with the British, that they were going to fight with the colonists. Now, they were already enslaved. They were already, even if they were considered free people, they knew the condition of this country and what the outlook for those people who were going, those crooks, criminals in relationship to the king, what they were going to do. But they decided that they were not going to leave. Now, a large portion of the African population left Philadelphia. But these guys didn't leave, and they become the head of the church, the head of the Masonic orders. They become the head of the educational system. So what I'm saying, what I see is that there is some that made a choice about this in spite of their own circumstances. And when you look at the other side, those Africans that said, I don't want no part of this. I want my own place. They the ones that were the ones, the leadership and the movement was killed. Once them guys were found, and I can only use Denmark VC, Nat Turner, you know, we could say even with MOVE or with the Panthers, or even with Malcolm or Martin, when those types of leadership come up, natural leaderships or Reverend Pinkney, they killed them before they're able to create a system around the people to where the people can be able to eat, because they have to eat, right? You're only going to be loyal to somebody if they're going to feed you, or you're going to be able to feed yourself. And that's the way I see it, that these, what we see now, I wouldn't want you to be discouraged, because we're looking at somebody else who made a choice. But what you keep enunciating is, in my mind, is the strategic vision that we have. When I look at the Republic of New Africa, they said we want 5 states. When I look at the Pan African, the UNIA, they said we want to build up the continent of Africa. These are the institutional, historical movements that seems to speak to what we believe we need to see. I don't want to say with you, because I agree with you, brother.
Let me ask you this, Richard, in all sincerity, in all honesty, based on way we look at things, in all truthfulness, really, do we want to be free? Do we want to be separated from our oppressor? Do we want to put up the necessary fight to liberate ourselves, to be independent, to, as one would say, be free men? Do we want to give up the trinkets of, you know, the so-called house, the so-called job, and all of those things, which really, if you truthfully look at it, it doesn't lead anything, because you don't have your own communities. If you do get a chance to have a community, at some point in time, they kick you out, they gentrify it, and then you just move in closer to some place that you may not want to be, but you have no other choice to go. So, I mean, honestly, do you want to take a stand? Do you want to be in a situation to where, as you independent from this devil, and have to be free and live on your own, separated from this beast? I don't think so.
That's the number game, right?
Right.
Because, you know, I think there is a small population, you know, scattered all over. And again, using what one of the guests tonight said in relationship to Reverend Pinkney, that his support didn't come from the community that he comes out of. It came from around the country. Other people who are other places who identify that's right action. That's just action, what you're saying, what you're trying to do. They naturally, even at a distance, are willing to support. I think that, you know, that's the continuous indication that we are out here. Now, are we in a collective community? No. I mean, in a place. But have we had, again, that... And I think that we should use the term strategic vision, strategic intent, strategy, tactics, because we are up against, as you always say, we are up against something. It's not that this person is formidable foe. We're just up against somebody, if they are, what's that word? If they are a psychopath, they will take themselves out to take you out.
Well, I think history proved that. I would just like to figure out how we as a people can collectively come together and bring forward the people that support someone like a Brother Pinckney to be able to, I mean, not go like the nation talks about getting a state or something like that, but to be able to strategically work hand in hand with one another to build enclaves where we could communicate and do the necessary things to survive this beast. Because in all truthfulness, I don't know if you noticed this, but they just basically repealed Dodd-Frank. Right. And you know, with them repealing Dodd-Frank, what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years. You know for a fact that there's going to be something worse than what happened in 2008. You know what I mean? Because it's just their nature of their crookedism to just cause total destruction. Now, I'll leave you on this. Can black people survive another economic crisis like what happened to us in 2008? And I tell you, absolutely not. And the reason why I say it is because we don't have nothing. We have no home ownership. We have no stocks. We have nothing. It's just like I'm trying to explain to a brother, you talking about putting money in the black bank. No, don't put your money in the black bank until you own the stock of the black bank. Because if you don't own the stock of the black bank, you really have no say-so in the direction of which the black bank go. You take 100, 200 people, and they buy the stock of that black bank, you could really do something instead of having those same 200 people put $100 in the bank. You take 200 people and buy $200 or $100 worth of that stock of that bank, and let's see what type of difference you could really make. So, I mean, I'm just saying, we need to definitely get our financial situation in order, because with this repeal of Dodd-Frank, we in some real, real serious trouble, because you already see what type of people that they have in this administration. And you know they're gonna suck everybody dry, and they'll gnaw off the limbs of one of their own for extra dollar for I don't know to do what, because I'm going to tell you something. There is not that much of a difference from a $55 a pound steak and a $25 a pound steak. I'm letting you know, from age to prime. There's really not that different. And, you know, I'm into good eating. So, you know, I'm telling you, that's how this cracker gets down.
Well,
so,
Jay, let me
thank you.
Well, hold it, Jay. I don't want you to leave yet. I just want to mention something to you before you go, because you asked a question, and Richard answered it. But I want to throw something in the mix also. When you asked about, you don't know what's wrong with our people when they want to gravitate towards people that abuse them, right? Right?
Right. Right.
Now, I'm going to throw this in. But I want to read a portion of an article to kind of preface it. Don't pay attention really to the meat of the article. Just pay attention to what the message I'm trying to send. Now, this was in the, because I put it on the Time for Awakening page. It was an article that was released earlier in the week. Read a couple of paragraphs. It said, it's been nearly 40 years since the Latter-day Saints Church vanquished the ban of blacks in the priesthood and expanded its welcome to women, black women. Yet racism remains a barrier for many of the faithful. Tammy Smith was called the N-word in Salt Lake City Latter-day Saints Temple a week after her wedding day. The same slur was aimed at Sandra Vrains in April on her Facebook page by a temple-going Mormon. In both cases, the women were advised to forgive the offenses and take the high road and focus on the positive. That approach, however, has hidden rather the solvent talent, the latent racism in the Latter-day Saints church ranks, says Vrains, co-author of The Day of the Black Mormon. It says, Latter-day Saints leaders offered no apology, nor at the time any in-depth analysis of the reasons for the exclusionary policies, justifications, including the notions that blacks were descendants of the biblical bad guy, Cain. Statements dismissing the denigration of blacks offered by previous Mormon authorities remain in print and often are embraced by believers along with the band's demise. So it talks in this article about the use of derogatory terms still with blacks in the Mormons. Now, I want to focus in on a statement that was told to these two black women that was slurs were used against them. It says, in both cases, the women were advised to forgive the offenses and take the high road and focus on the positive. Now, if you remember, I think recently, Michelle Obama spoke at the college commencement, black college commencement, and was addressing some things, slurs or whatever that was used towards her and her husband. And she said, when they take the low road, we take the high road. Right? I'm going to go there. Listen, all of that stuff that they're talking is a belief in European Christianity, which would tell black people that they're supposed to endure all this crap from Europeans. And they do it because they believe that somehow that's supposed to be godly. Now, I'm familiar with the Bible, and it tells folks to do things to help out somebody that is ignorant of a thing and that you can show an example to. But it don't tell you to make a fool out of yourself, because it also tells you about somebody that keeps repeating the same thing, to either get away from them people, leave them alone, or do something where it can alleviate you of the problem. That's in the same Bible that's being read. It don't tell you to keep putting up with new abuses from folks that really don't want to change. It's obvious that a lot of these things, other people, Europeans and others, know that these things exist. But it's clear from countless examples that the system and the gatekeepers of white supremacy don't want to change. So what purpose does it serve black people to keep putting up with these abuses, to get closer to an oppressor that really don't want anything to do with you? A perfect example is this article. You're joining a religion that was clearly started by Europeans in the 1800s that excluded blacks, where they made up their own Bible and their own saints. But blacks want to be involved in the religion where whites still call them all kind of derogatory names right in the church temple. And then the blacks are told to take the high road. Come on here. That's a part of what you're talking about. That mentality itself comes out of the belief of a European or Eurocentric style Christianity that's been taught to our people, that our people still believe here in 2017. It don't come from anywhere else. We might as well call a spade. That's what it is. Well, now, I'm not trying to offend nobody's belief. I'm just dealing with reality. Because.
No, you've been trained that way.
Oh, exactly. Because, Jay, if I was abusing you, you'd have some choice words for me. You don't hear other blacks. You don't hear other blacks telling blacks to take the high road.
I'll put it to you like this. Elliot, I got a family member that was abusive towards me. I'll go on record and say it. I had a brother who was abusive towards me when I was younger. I ain't speak to him in 15 years, bro. That's how I get down. Now, the only reason he still walked the earth is because my daddy told me, leave him alone. Don't, that's your brother. Just leave him alone. Walk away. So I had to make a choice. I either was going to put him in a box or I just wasn't going to deal with him. And for 18 years, we never said a word to each other. Now, mind you, my sister was on her deathbed, and me and him ran into each other, and I guess with the fact that my sister was about to leave the planet, we had a conversation. And I laid down the ground rules to him about how, you know, we could let bygones be bygones, and I'll deal with you. And could I honestly tell you, to this day, I don't have any problems out of him whatsoever? A matter of fact, to be truthful with you, he probably treats me as good as anybody. You know what I mean? Because he realized there are people in this world who are not going to take abuse from people who hurt them. And sadly, we have, like you said, a forgiving nature, and we don't know how to cut our oppressor off and deal with our enemies in two fashions. Leave them alone or be brutal towards them. And that's why we're in the condition that we in as a people. And if we ever figured that out, then I think we would be better off. Because all religion has ever done, as far as I'm concerned, is lead you into accepting your oppression from that which gives you the book. Because they only pick out certain so-called scriptures that allowed them to put forward the narrative that they wish to give you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Sympathetic,
yeah,
to what their agenda is. And their agenda is to do one thing, to control you. Their agenda is not to have you move forward hand in hand with them. That's why you got that pork chop chicken eating preacher as the head, because he wants you to listen to his word, to be under his spell, to follow his dictation, and to give him what? Your money, so that he's able to do whatever he pleased and guiding you into that foolishness. And nobody figure it out. And those that do figure it out, what do they do, Elliot and Richard? They leave the church.
Jay, listen, as always, I want to thank you for sharing with us tonight.
Have a good night, brother. And listen, the game is not on Friday night. The series is going to be hopefully tomorrow. So you can come to work, you and Richard, Friday night, and let us get this nourishment.
Wait. I'm going to be honest. It wasn't about the game. I didn't get out of my shop till late.
I know, brother.
We didn't
have
do
a
it.
Good one.
Talk to you soon.
Take care, man.
Richard, it was an interesting conversation. It was an interesting conversation, period. We had one call to an open forum.
Continuously making a connection of dots. That's the way I see it. Internationally, in relationship to Africa, and locally. You know?
Yeah, and listen, it's clear that the struggle continues. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.